Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Liberty Lens. I'm your host, Big John, here to discuss things of national importance to both libertarians and non-libertarians, anybody that lives in America. And helping me along in this task is none other than my co-host, Mr. Mike Termott. Mike, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing great. Once again, you have managed to oversell our show. We will talk about things of national importance, and we're going to start with how important it is to Texans.
Yes.
So I'm very excited about the whole thing.
Because, you know, everything gets done so big in Texas that it spills out outside of Texas. That's
all. In this case, that's true.
Yeah, that is true. All right. So let's kick it off by saying, as everyone I'm sure has heard, there is a redistricting plan taking place in Texas where Governor Abbott has called a special session to gerrymander, there's no other way of putting it, gerrymander the congressional districts in Texas to create 5 additional Republican seats ahead of the midterm elections. This request came pretty much, I think, directly from President Trump himself and has been supported, as we'll talk about a little bit later, by the Department of Justice, a Department of Justice letter of opinion by Harmeet Dhillon, the Associate General, Assistant Attorney General. Now, this in turn has sparked outrage beyond the borders of Texas.
We are shocked.
Totally shocked. You have at least 3 governors of blue states, Governor Newsom, Governor Pritzker, Governor Hochul, California, Illinois, New York, saying, hey, if this nonsense in Texas goes through, in our opinion, we're going to gerrymander our states to counteract any gains in Texas or any other red states.
Yes.
So at this point, Mike, what's going on? I mean, I'm old school, as I'm sure you are. Gerrymandering, while on some levels despicable, has always been to the victor goes the spoils, right?
Yeah.
Governors and legislatures, after the decennial census, meaning every 10 years, when the new census comes out, they jump on it and say, let's create these crazy districts to maximize our party's gains, minimize the opposition's. But why do you think, let's talk about this, why do you think this has taken on such a, like, national firestorm when we all know it happens everywhere? By no means is this a Republican disease. Why is it so important now?
Well, a couple of different reasons. One, let's bear in mind the background here, which is that everyone has done it for 100 years. This is, gerrymandering is a 19th century term.
Yes.
Right? This is not something that was created last Friday. It's something that every state legislature does. It is up to the state legislature, by the way. It's not up to the congressional delegates, not up to U.S. Congress, the U.S. Senate.
Right.
It is up to each state. And it is a matter of state law, so it has to pass whatever state it is, has to pass their House, has to pass their Senate, has to be signed by their governor, just like any other law. You're right. It is typically triggered by the census every 10 years. So, and the reason for that is because you have the census. The census tells you how many people live in your state. That determines how many congressional representatives you get. Everyone gets 2 senators, love it or shove it, but you have a certain number of congresspersons assigned to your state. And if, for example, if you're Florida, that number keeps going up, right?
Right.
And if you're Illinois or New York, that number keeps going down.
Right.
Not coincidentally, it's because everybody from Chicago moves to the west coast of Florida and everybody from New York moves to the east coast of Florida.
Right.
And so you necessarily have to redraw your districts.
Right.
Right. Because you have a different number of them. So this gets triggered by the census. The purpose of the census is to determine how many representatives are to form the delegation from each state.
It's referred to as apportionment of the House of Representatives to the House from each state, right?
That is exactly right. Good word. Good word. That's our big word for the day. So
yes,
that happens every 10 years. But the law doesn't say that it can't happen at other times.
Right.
Yikes. So, I think folks are just waking up to the idea, we can do this whenever we want. Now, The Department of Justice wrote this letter. You may well be right. It may be at the behest of President Trump himself, or it could be some other enterprising, politically motivated Republican working for the administration, or it could have just fallen off of someone's podcast. You know, maybe this came from your friend William DePillar's podcast. I don't know.
Yes.
Someone came up with the idea.
Right.
And it made its way to the Department of Justice, who wrote a letter, and the letter did not say, hey, we want more seats for Republicans because we are Republicans and there's no law saying we can't, so go do this. Rather, the letter is attempting to offer a fig leaf, a pretext for the Texas state legislature to take matters into their own hands. The letter is suggesting that some of the districts that were drawn in the last apportionment were racially motivated, were illegally based on coalitions.
Right.
There had been an argument that this is probably one layer into the weeds where we don't need to go, but there had been a court case pending. The Department of Justice dropped it regarding whether or not certain coalitions, which is a dog whistle for racism, certain coalitions are allowed and certain ones aren't. So the Department of Justice is saying, hey, look at these districts, right? There might be some foolishness afoot, and you might have to redraw these. Well, that just opened the whole can of worms, and so the state legislatures decided this is a good time to just redraw the whole thing.
Right.
So they came up with a plan, redrew everything. It passed the Texas Senate. And that's when the Texas House had to pass the same thing, but they couldn't achieve quorum.
Right. Now, this is another key point here, right? So, first, referring to the DOJ letter, it's important to draw the distinction. They were not citing a ruling or like a court opinion. They were saying, we've come to the conclusion that there may have been some hinky stuff going on in the 2021 redistricting, which came after the most recent census. So that's not like an age-old thing that they're trying to do.
No, that's like an hour ago. Right.
Right. That's an hour ago in terms of political terms. So that gave Governor Abbott, and again, take it for what it's worth, reports were saying he was initially, I don't know if I should do this.
He was skeptical about it.
But then he saw the political headwinds and said, I got to get ahead of this. So he called the special session. Now, Democrats, like they did in 2003, I believe, and in 2021, the Texas Constitution has no requirement for representatives to show up for work, for House representatives to show up for work.
As we have all learned, apparently there is not such a rule.
Correct. So it is well within the rights of any House member to say, I'm not showing up to work. And a lot of people, like here in New York, would be, who cares? That means there's less of you to vote for your position, right? But in Texas, there is a requirement that 100 of 150, so it's a two-thirds quorum, is required to do any state business. Meaning
you can't even take a vote if you don't get 100 showing up.
Right.
Well, if at least 50 don't show, you're screwed.
Right. And there's 53, 54 or so Democrats in the Texas House. They all decided.
There are 53 or 54 who are not in the Texas House.
Yes. And that's the key. They, much like they did in 2003 and 2021, they just decided, like, we're leaving. And they always flee to jurisdictions that are not bound by extradition laws back to Texas. So,
like Illinois,
like New York. So all of a sudden you have these Texas House Democrats showing up with Kathy Hochul here in New York locally on TV telling us about the horrible nature of Texas Republicans, also in Illinois with Governor Pritzker. And in some ways, you can't nab them if you're Governor Abbott, right? Like you could put out a warrant. What's it called? A quo? I forget the Latin term, but there's a warrant you could put out for them.
Quo warrantum.
Quo warrantum. Thank you. There's the putting the Texas House Sergeant at Arms, who can, if he sees them anywhere, he can just literally grab them and drag them back to the house, that sort of thing, right?
Right. And we're not sure that those warrants would stand up in court, by the way.
Right. There's that debate as well.
Your earlier point that the Texas Constitution doesn't say they have to show up for work.
Right. So now you've got a standoff, which is the Texas Republicans, who are also claiming, like, hey, now Democrats don't want to get your business done, Texans. They're the ones holding this up. They want to misrepresent you. Texas Democrats are saying, this is nonsense. We can't redraw these districts every 2 or 3 years. That becomes like, you know,
oh, but we can.
But see, now that's the thing, right? Like, oh, but we can. So now talk to me about that. First, Mike, tell me your opinion of Texas Democrats as a political ploy, as a political strategy, saying we're just not showing up.
Yeah, well, I don't think we should be shocked. To your point, they have done this a couple of times in the past, right?
Yes.
And it fits with what a lot of Democrats believe to be true. By the way, I don't think I believe the following, but a lot of Democrats believe the following to be true, that the reason they haven't been more successful lately is that they do not appear to be sufficiently tough on Republicans.
Hmm.
A lot of Democrats believe that the polling tells them that they look soft when it comes to fighting fill in the blank. Donald
right.
Trump, the Texas governor, the Texas legislature, others inside the administration, ICE, what have you. A lot of Democrats believe that their political problem is tied to the fact that they do not appear to be sufficiently hard on Republicans. I do not believe that it is all true. I think Democrats' problems are much, much deeper than that. But be that as it may, they believe that they have to look as tough as possible. And so they have taken what some of them have characterized as the nuclear option. Apparently, the nuclear option means leaving Texas, right?
Yes. Yeah,
and the governor thinks that the nuclear option is arresting them, bringing them back. If that doesn't work, he can just I think his next idea is to declare them residents of New York and Illinois, no longer eligible to serve in the House, and vacate their seats. You know, everybody's got their own personal nuclear option. We'll see how all of that.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned, because in Texas, it seems like Texas Republicans can't seem to get out of each other's way to figure out ways of punishing these Democrats. The governor is threatening like dereliction of duty. Senator Cornyn went to Kash Patel and said, hey, I want you to look into the possibility that these Democrats are being bribed.
Right.
Or public corruption, bribery or public corruption is
they're receiving donations
to not do their job,
at least in part, help finance their excursions,
right?
Which is a dereliction of duty. So if they're accepting money in order to do it, that is in some sense public corruption. That is the accusation. I think
right.
that's a stretch, but it, you know, good on him for creativity.
Right. So Cornyn's involved, right? Then you've got Attorney General Ken Paxton, who says he has vowed to, quote, hunt down absent Democrats, promising what you mentioned, the quo warranto actions, to declare their seats vacant if they don't return by the House Speaker's deadline. The most recent deadline is August 15th. So you've got these three major Texas Republicans who at times are now at each other's throats over who gets to claim that they drag these Democrats back. Who's tougher on the Democrats?
The Democrats are all arguing who's tougher on the Republicans. The Republicans are all arguing who's tougher on the Democrats. So, you know, the AG and the governor are all trying to look as tough as possible. And by the way, there is some juice there, because the number of seats matters a lot. Right. Remember how close the Congress is, the Republican-Democrat split in Washington, 5 seats swinging in Texas would make it nearly a tie. And that means that the Republicans wouldn't be able to lose more than a couple of votes on any given legislature.
And Mike,
that's almost unacceptable.
And what you just said is very key because, yeah, those five seats become important because it's virtually a tie. But you also have to take into account the historical decline of the party in power in midterm elections, right? There's always they lose seats typically as a matter of historical record. And the latest polling, President Trump is actually declining. The latest YouGov polls and everything, he's actually dropping. And now it's way too early for 2026 purposes. So I'm sure a lot of this is percolating in the president's mind, in J.D. Vance's mind, in the Project 2025 guy's mind, saying we may not get more than the 2 years to 2026 to push through our agendas. How can we, to steal from Lars Mapstead, rig the system so that we're still in power post-2026, even if we fall victim to the traditional swoon of the dominant party in the midterm election?
That's right, because these five seats could be enough to swing the entire Congress from Republican control to Democratic control.
And vice versa, right, absolutely. So tell me now, if you're now, there's also lawsuits going on, right? If this gerrymandering is specifically to disenfranchise selected groups of people, and again, to be a little bit more clear, to disenfranchise minority voters,
right?
That violates the Supreme Court ruling on the Fair Voting Act and representation, right? So there's a lot at play here.
I don't think, let me just jump in real quick. I don't think that counter lawsuit from the Democrats is going to carry a lot of water. It does, you know, this is big Democrat rhetorical talking points, and good for them for trying it, I suppose.
Sure.
But I don't think it's going to carry a lot of water. Democrats are asserting that the new apportionment that is proposed would marginalize the effectiveness of Hispanics in particular.
Right.
There's two problems with your argument. One is that it's not true, and the other is that it's not true. The first one is that it disenfranchises Democratic voting Hispanics and beefs up the influence of Republican voting Hispanics.
Right.
And you can tell based on, you know, census tracts, you get data all the way down to the census tract, and the census tracts are these little bitty pieces of the district, and they get moved from one district to another, right? You can tell how these swing. And so it is not the case that all Hispanics would lose influence. Some would gain a significant amount of influence. And in fact, there are those who say that one of the new Republican, one of the districts that would become Republican that hasn't been, is likely to be dominated by an Hispanic representative. So there is a bit of an irony there. There's a bit of an irony there. The other reason that it's not true is because the motivation is clearly not to cut out Hispanics. The motivation is to create more districts. I think the Republicans, whatever you might think of the racist motivations of any one particular group, and I tend to take most folks at face value. I don't think there's anywhere near the amount of racism in the United States as some folks would assert. But let's set that aside for just a moment. The true motivation of the Republicans are to get more seats. I think the Republicans would enfranchise Martians if they thought it would give them five more seats in the Texas congressional delegation. I really don't believe this has much to do with racism. And the fact that Democrats have a larger voting approval rating among Hispanics than Republicans do in most places, not all places, as I just mentioned, but in most places in Texas, means that it gives the Democrats an opportunity to conflate the two.
Mm.
Democrats are being disenfranchised. The Democrats are disproportionately Hispanic. So you see where this is going. So it gives them the opportunity to say, look at all these Hispanics who are being disenfranchised. That is nothing but a coincidence. The Republicans are trying to disenfranchise you.
They're trying to disenfranchise Democrats.
Now, Right. All of them. The black ones, the white ones, the Hispanics right. and Asians. Anyone who's a Democrat, right. I think the Republicans would be happy to disenfranchise.
I don't put stock in the racism argument. I tend to agree with you on that in this particular case.
Yeah.
The thing that I find disingenuous, though, a little bit on the Republican side, which has already been disproven, is their so-called desire to stick to numerical proportions. So they're saying, like, hey, 54% voted for Trump, therefore, or whatever the percentage is,
yep.
that percentage has to equate to the number of representatives. And I've always said, like, first of all, that's nonsense.
Of course it's nonsense.
If you applied their logic to anything other than apportionment, it's typically not a Republican stance, right? So if you were to say, well, right? So if you were to say, like, okay, 40% of whatever in New York are socialists, therefore we need socialism in New York.
All the right, Republicans that ain't going to fly.
And we see how Ted Cruz feels about that from Texas, trying to tell New Yorkers who to elect for mayor, right? So,
right.
So it is disingenuous both parties' parts, and
there's a lot of crap being thrown out.
And for the fact, where's the Libertarian district? If we're going numerically, where's the Libertarian district being drawn in Texas? Where's
district? Thank you. Good for you. We right. need a Libertarian party representative in Texas. I think that's an excellent idea.
Right. So you have that. But what I think I find objectionable is the mid decennial reapportionment, because it ties into what President Trump and Vice President Vance have been saying lately, which is, you know what, the last census shouldn't count because it had so many illegal immigrants counted in the census that it's not fair. And if we only counted U.S. citizens, everybody, Democrat blue states would lose 20, 25, 30 representatives in the House. They would just disappear. So that argument initially might make sense to some people until you actually read the enumeration clause in the Constitution.
That's where it right. It counts everybody.
It counts everybody, not just citizens. And by the way, right. it's been that way since 1790. All the Supreme Court cases related to this issue have come down on the side that you count everybody regardless of citizenship status.
That's exactly right. And if you want it to work differently than that, then you're going to have to move the legislation, or in this case, probably a constitutional amendment to make it work differently. And people haven't done the heavy lift to change that. By the way, this does go back to the Republicans' assertion, again, without evidence, that the Democrats were motivated to keep the border open in order to beef up representation.
Right.
Among potentially blue voters and what they believed would be blue.
And it resonates, doesn't it, Mike? Like, if you're like an average sure. voter, it resonates, right? Because
yep.
you kind of say, like, why are we counting illegal immigrants? Why are we counting right. illegal aliens, right?
So, and there is an argument against it, but, as folks that believe in the rule of law instead of just the assertion of the moment.
Right.
You've got to go through the lift, and maybe you could convince most Americans to change the Constitution in this regard, but you've got to go through that. Even good ideas that are not constitutional must not be allowed. So
right.
that's an important thing. I'm glad that you brought that up. There's also some silliness, I believe, in this idea that this is just about the Republicans, right? I'm not trying to give them a pass and say right. that they're altruistic in this and they think it's going to make the world a better and more fair place. No, that would just be silly. But it's not as though the Republicans invented this. Right. The Democrats, I just made a quick list. The Democrats have done this successfully, by the way, in New Mexico, Oregon, Maryland, Massachusetts, Rhode Island. Illinois is an interesting example because it is to Chicago that so many of the folks from the state house have fled Texas. Illinois is an interesting example because they went from 11 Democrats out of 18.
Okay.
11 to 7, right? 11 Democrats, 7 Republicans out of 18 representatives. They got cut down to 17 again, because everyone's moving to Florida, right?
Right.
Okay. And they still beefed it up to 13 Democrats. Let right. that sink in. In other words, the Republicans went from 7 to 4. So, you know, don't be telling me that this is an invention of the – I'm not trying to give the Democrats a pass. I'm not trying – but, you know, let's not pretend that, you know, this is mathematics that only a Republican could understand, right?
God, no.
So, and New York is another interesting example. I'm glad you brought up Kathy Hochul, who said, this is war.
Right.
Now it's war. Now, when we did it in Illinois, when we did it in New York, that wasn't war because that was based on a recent census. Apparently, the definition of war these days is a certain number of years after the census. That makes it war. Otherwise, it's completely a good
idea. Right, and you're right. It's completely hypocritical because, like I said at the outset, growing up, I first ran into this in New York at the time, considering myself a Republican when I was a teenager and looking into this. You know, you'd be – here's a perfect example. George Santos, the guy who's in jail now, was a representative for a particular district in New York. His district, if you looked at a New York map, ran from eastern Long Island, which is Trump country, all the way through the Bronx and I believe – all the way through Queens and I believe the Bronx, which is – like 100% Kamala AOC country. And he was able to navigate the fact that in the eastern part of his district, he was Joe Trump. In the western part of his district, he was, you know, the Hispanic, not Jewish guy running around, right? He was able to convince two different groups of voters that he was their guy because of the geographical nonsense of his district.
You're trying to convince me that Santos was a guy who did not always deliver the same message to everybody, who is not the paragon of integrity that we had all hoped?
Not just that, Mike, but the ridiculousness of some of these maps, because in the old days, well, actually gerrymandering, I looked into the history of this, is tied into that gerrymander or gerry in some language actually means salamander.
Oh, yeah.
And that was the first sort of weird district back in the day when these things were drawn by hand.
Yeah.
One of the redistricting looked like a salamander, so they called it gerrymandering, right?
Yes.
So, but now with computers, obviously, you get these shapes because it has to be a continuous line to draw the district. That's the only rule, right? It has to be a continuous line.
They have to be able to touch each other, all of the areas.
Right. Some of these things are like a topologist's wet dream, right? They've got 500 sides to it. God knows how many corners and angles and twists and
now,
turns.
Now, John, I get the impression you are not aware of my own personal experience in this regard. So let me share.
Go ahead. Sure, please. Okay, I'd love to hear this now. Go ahead.
I ran for Congress as a Libertarian in Florida's District 20 in a special election in 2021. Well, I should say it started in 2021. It didn't finish until January of 2022 when the late, great Alcee Hastings of the Democratic Party passed away. Alcee Hastings, a convicted felon, but no matter, he was beloved in his district, District 20. Okay, District 20 had three different pieces. Two of those pieces were in Broward County,
okay,
but did not ostensibly touch each other. I will explain in a moment.
Okay.
And one piece in Palm Beach County that was not contiguous to the northernmost piece of the Broward County part of District 20. So three completely distinct pieces. What they all had in common was that they were the poor areas. Let's just call it like it is, right? And I can use fancy terms. And they voted Democrat. So it's one of it was at the time, I believe, the fourth bluest district in the United States.
Wow. Okay.
Yep. Okay. Now, how were these three connected in order to qualify as a district?
Can I guess?
Go ahead.
Did they meet at one block, one corner of one block?
You're close, but they were actually miles apart.
Oh, okay. Then I want to hear this then.
No, that's a good idea. Like a flower with petals.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
No, that's good. I like your thinking. Okay. That would actually be more logical than what actually happened.
Oh, right. I'm intrigued.
Each one included a corridor. By the way, it still is to this day. Someone could look it up. Each one includes a corridor. I don't know exactly how wide. I suspect it's only like 100 feet wide, but whatever. Each one includes a corridor that runs out to the Everglades. And then there's another corridor running perpendicular to those three through the Everglades to connect them up. No one lives in these corridors, but the corridors connect these three sections of population.
Wow.
That is Florida's District 20.
Wow. See, now, if I was a consultant in New York, I would claim the same right that you just did, which is brilliant. Not you, but the district map drawers. I would use the sewers of New York as connective tissue.
Well, you've got a sewer. It's basically the expressway. You know, one runs out 595 and one runs out Calle Ocho. And, you know, it's
wow.
It's
wow.
Crazy. Okay, wow. So this brings me to an issue that we don't want to spend more than 1 minute on this, because it's super technical nerdy, but it is of curiosity because the media gets this wrong.
Sure.
There are two issues afoot, two very different issues. And that is to say that there are two different strategies that can be pursued when you're redrawing your districts. One strategy, if you're the party in power, right, is you draw these so that you have as many seats as possible that you're going to win.
Right.
So what you do is, you draw as many districts as possible so that you're going to win, say, 55-45 or 60-40, right?
Right.
But that necessarily means, in the case of Texas, you've got to put all those Democrats somewhere, right? You can't ship them back across the border. You can't ship them to Oklahoma. They've got to be in some district.
Right.
So you cram all of the Democrats into a small number of districts.
Right.
That means that those districts become super Democratic.
Right. They're winning 90-10 every cycle.
They're winning 90-10. That's how Florida District 20 came into being. Okay.
Right.
That means that in those super districts that are typically created in favor of the minority party, you're going to get the most radical, potentially at least, the most radical representative of the minority party.
Yeah, you're getting the AOCs, the Ilhan Omars, those
in
people.
The case of Florida District 20, Alcee Hastings.
Alcee Hastings in your case, yep.
Exactly. So yeah. Do me a favor, I want to show
sure.
what I mean here with a quick mathematical, this is a very low-tech, right? Extremely
right.
low-tech. Okay, plan A, plan B. Imagine plan A is how you started in the world. And I think most Americans probably believe, or at least before the past couple of weeks, believe that this is sort of how it works, right?
Right.
This is the simplest example possible. Imagine you have three districts, and you've got 150 Republicans and 150 Democrats, and each one is split 50-50.
Right.
So you got, you know, in District 1, you got 50 Republicans and 50 Democrats, and that's the same in District 2, and it's the same in District 3. And every 2 years, you fight it out. Right?
Right.
It's a dogfight to figure out. And maybe one team wins all three, loses all three. Maybe it's 2-1, 1-2. Who knows?
Right.
Well, if you're a Republican and you come to power and you have a chance to change all of this, plan B looks a lot better.
Right.
So you scooch the line so that I get more Republicans in District 1, more Republicans in District 2. Now I'm winning those 60-40.
Right.
But the Democrats got to go somewhere, so you cram all of them into District 3.
Right.
In my little silly example.
Right, right,
you
right.
You still have 150 Republicans and 150 Democrats in your state. Can't change that. But District 3 becomes an absolute slam dunk for a Democrat. And
right.
So what really matters, as mattered in Florida's District 20, nobody cared that Mike Chermont was running, right, as a Libertarian.
Right.
Nobody cared about the Republican who was running.
Right.
All they cared about was who is going to win the Democratic primary.
Absolutely. Yes, you're absolutely
right. In our case, it was Sheila Sherfalus McCormick, who's now been the congressperson representative for several years, back from that January 2022 election.
Right.
Now, interestingly, the moment she won the primary, she went to Washington and met with Nancy
Pelosi.
Pelosi, thank you.
Yeah.
Paul Pelosi's wife, right, Nancy yes. Pelosi. And, you know, started measuring the drapes, possibly literally. But she immediately went to Washington. Did not wait for the election. Why should she?
Right. Right.
Nobody cared. As a matter of fact, I got, you know, the endorsement interview with the local newspaper, the Miami paper down there, right, the Herald, who clearly liked what I was laying out and said that the voters weren't ready for it.
Mm.
In other words, we like Mike. Mike seems like nice. Seems like a smart guy. He seems like he's qualified. You know, like a lot of the stuff. Blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. Nice, very kind. We cannot endorse him because he's outside of what the voters would have. Boy, that's showing leadership for a publication, right?
But in some ways, they're the victims of the game as well, right?
Because, of course they are.
Right? So, and to that extent.
They were telling the truth.
They were telling the truth. So, and it almost makes you wonder how districts flip at all, right? Because, and I think to your point, Americans might be interested in understanding, like, why does this have to happen so often? Like, and do we really want the type of absolute power that comes with gerrymandering? That if you're able to ram through this gerrymandering, especially more than once a decade, I think, I think most voters would be, all right, it's kind of crappy, it happens, but we understand at least once a decade gives everybody a chance to get their bearings. It gives you a chance to see how the national thing plays out over a 10-year period. You've got senatorial elections within that 10-year span. There's some sort of recourse. But to have this happen, like in Texas – now, I did some research. To be fair, these in the middle of the decade type of things are rare, even for Texas, even for New York.
Oh, yeah, yeah. All
they're
virtually
rare.
Unheard of.
Virtually unheard of. But Texas is now going for twice in the same 10-year period. This would be the second time, So, Mike, if you're given the chairmanship of the How Do We Make Gerrymandering Obsolete Committee at some point in the future, what's your thoughts around how do we at least resolve this? I hate using the word fair because it's so subjective, but how do we make this more representative of the voters in any given state?
First of all, there's no such thing as fair. It's a word that
Agreed.
Should be stricken from our vernacular.
Agreed.
Even courts do not purport to be fair, do not even strive, right? It's not even one of their objectives. Interestingly, John, New York is an interesting example because New York has a board.
Right.
B-O-A-R-D, by the way, although they are usually B-O-R-E-D, but they were certainly B-O-A-R-D at one point. Kathy Hochul says this is war. She did attempt war earlier, okay?
Right.
The Democrats drew such an egregious example of redistricting coming off the last census, that the court struck it down. Now, I don't know how egregious you have to be for the courts didn't strike it down anywhere else, right? This is now you've gone too far. So, you know, spare me the tears over now it's war, right?
Right.
The boards are not a bad idea. There are technical, you know, computer AI enhanced ways of going at this. The statisticians have long ago figured out how to aggregate metropolitan statistical areas.
Right.
MSAs are one of those things that people in your audience who deal with population data will be familiar with. There are certain rules that people come up with. We're going to include one more census tract, as long as they're contiguous and there's a certain amount of exchange, people crossing from one to another or have a certain number of things in common, demographically speaking, for example.
Right.
There are algorithms that you can come up with that are not completely dissimilar to the way that economists and statisticians develop MSAs that could be deployed in the creation of congressional districts. This could be done by a computer. And maybe in the future. Yeah.
And listen, it's the way marketers target their preferred customers, right? I mean, it's the exact same exercise, except that marketers are like, yeah, we don't care if we disenfranchise people who aren't buying this product. Our job is to identify with great efficiency where our advertising, where our campaign dollars are going to be spent next.
Yep.
So to your point, the computer algorithms long ago in the 90s were deployed that say, this is your, you know, give me what you want to accomplish. I want to get five more seats. Great. This is the best way of doing it. My thinking is somewhere along those, because these so-called independent boards are rarely independent, right? They're always in the
Never.
Bucket of who's
in independent who's goes in the same bucket as the word fair, right?
Exactly. So my proposal would be either court or referendum approved guidelines for what you want. In other words, is it the goal of your state to numerically represent the last census, the last decennial census, as closely as possible in terms of district representation? Great. Those are your goals. Feed them into an algorithm, and whatever the algorithm pops out once a decade is fine by me. Because to your point, it's much like the Fed. I'd rather have a – look, we all want to end the Fed. But if we have to have a Fed, have it rules-based. Nobody's idea of whether rates are going up or down, whether inflation is under control or not. Like, throw that all the
way. Keep your decisions away from a bunch of partisan hacks trying to outvote each other.
That would be my vote. Like, okay, if New York wanted to be, representative, strictly proportional, you know, percentage-wise, great. Those are the rules. Now we know what the rules are. Every 10 years, you can redraw these districts to maximize that. If you want to be Texas and say we want cowboys instead of non-cowboys, fair enough. But at least you know what the rules are. You know what to campaign against. You know what to blah, 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 blah. Who to import, who to export. But at least you're not getting these mid-decade. To me, this is the nonsense part of it. Not just for Republicans, Democrats too. Any mid-decade special session gerrymandering just reeks of corruption beyond the normal corruption, if that makes any sense.
It does. I completely understand. I concur. I am less impressed with the mid-decadeness of this because I think it's approximately as corrupt when you do it an hour after the census as in the middle.
Okay.
It's just more. To your point, it's more, right?
Yeah.
So if you did it every 6 weeks, it would be 100 times worse, but I'm not sure it'd be worse in kind. It would just be worse in volume.
In frequency, yeah.
In frequency,
yeah.
And that is worse, so I agree with you. There are other ways to go at it, not just in proportion. There is a certain logic behind your idea of, you know, a lot of states might decide to try to make it as proportionate as possible, but that does a couple of things that you don't want it to do also. One is that it locks in the duopoly. The other, well, at least in people's minds, if not.
Well, I was going to say, would one byproduct be that if you had like a 5% registered libertarian population.
Could make a big difference.
Could that, by law, in my proposal, by law, that would mean you have to carve out one House representative.
Sure, but now you're going to a parliamentary district.
I understand there's pros and cons.
And that's a problem. The other problem is, we're not going to solve all of this. I'm just throwing out wrenches, right?
Sure.
The other problem is that there's an argument and a counter argument, but there is an issue with people wanting to be included in a district with people like themselves. Mm. In other words, if you have a district that has a funny shape, people are going to say, well, you know, you're bringing people in from 30 miles away that aren't like me, and that's potentially going to undermine my influence. I want my voice to be heard. The best way for my voice to be heard is if I am surrounded by 300,000 people just like me.
Right.
And so, you know, that might argue more for the rounded MSA type of district map development as opposed to going and grabbing these people or those people in order to come up with a certain result. Now, the problem with that idea, if I can shoot down my own idea real quick, is that without knowing in advance, you know, what if that comes up with a fairly politically lopsided map so right. that you get a whole lot of, say, Democrats and the Republicans are all crammed into a few districts. And so you get bomb-throwing Republicans. I don't know what a bomb-throwing Republican looks like, but the most radical Republicans in a small number of districts and the more centrist Democrats in a large number of districts. Now, I'm not suggesting that's either a bad thing or a good thing, but I guess what I'm saying is without a priori knowing what it is you're voting on, you could end up with results that people just don't like. And then it necessarily gets politicized. By the way, when we did that little plan A, plan B example, and I pointed out that you do get these districts that are right. representative of the minority party and that they are typically super balanced toward the minority party, which is the super majority in that particular district. There are arguments for the party in power to do that on purpose in a few cases for its own representatives. In other words, imagine Nancy Pelosi is your person. You're the Democratic Party. You're redistricting California.
Right.
Nancy is third in line to be president. Go back a few years ago. She is the Speaker of the House. You do not want her district to be a challenge for her. So you've got to necessarily compromise your objective of maximizing the number of Democratic-leaning districts in California. California is a particularly funny example because there's so many Democratic districts already. But, you know, work with me. This is a thought sure. experiment.
Sure.
You don't want to absolutely maximize the number of Democratic-leaning districts because you got to make sure that at least Nancy's district
right.
is very, very Democrat. You do not want the Speaker of the House bogged down with a dogfight against a Republican every 2 years.
Right. Right. And another thing to keep in mind is typically this happens when a party controls both state houses and the governor's mansion, right?
That's because, right.
Because, and that's another reason it's rare. Like every, because the governor can veto this, if any proposed plan, unless you have a 2/3 supermajority. And more often than not, these state houses are split. And if they're not split, one party does not have a supermajority, usually. So that's another reason why they're exceedingly rare. It's nothing you're going to solve. I would just like to see it be a little more predictable. Like I said, there's boundaries of corruption, right? There's, and it's horrible to say, but there's acceptable guardrails of political corruption that we've come to accept. Gerrymandering is one of those evils. Like I said, it always seemed to be if you had such an overwhelming victory politically where you controlled everything in the state, just like on the federal level, if you control like the Republicans have now, White House, House, and Senate, now's the time to cram through all your stuff, right? And on a state level, that means let's make permanent some of these gains by redrawing the maps. It's rare, it happens, and it leads to elongated cycles.
Yep.
Is it fair, equitable, whatever the appropriate word is? Probably not. But at least it's a long arc, and you kind of accepted it. This, like, every time, every 2 years, every time there's a shift in government, I think just leads to even more polarization, even more less of agreeing and compromise. Like, I mean, the compromise goes out the window because the first thing people reach for today, Mike, politically in this country is how do we get rid of the evil other guys?
Oh,
it's
yeah.
never like, where do we meet them on some, let's meet somewhere like the old Reagan Tip O'Neill. Let's meet in some middle. I'll concede you're the president. If you concede, I'm going to be here after you're gone. let's just kind of figure this out, right? What's best for the country? And that's gone now, Mike. Unfortunately, I don't see that.
It is gone. I think that good for you for bringing it up. I think that that is the correct context in which to view all of this. One might well wonder whether the Republicans would have the guts to pursue this as hard as they have were it not for the polarized environment in which we are politically swimming these days. Yeah. To your point, the governor was hesitant in the beginning, but quickly realized he has to get out ahead of it politically. And one has to wonder similarly whether the governor of New York would have characterized this as war were it not for the polarized environment in which we live. It's also the case that in a less polarized environment, the Democrats in the Texas State House may not have chosen the strategy of all going to Chicago and New York,
right?
Which is, let's be candid, a bit of a dopey look, right?
Absolutely.
You know, it definitely looks like you're running off with your tail between your legs. You've taken your ball and you've gone home so the other team can't play the game.
It's childish.
It's childish. It's not a good look. And were it not such a polarized environment, I query whether this would have been their choice. By the way, I think that there's an analogy that is worth mentioning. In the U.S. Senate, it takes 60 out of 100 votes in order to close the debate.
Right.
And closing a debate is required for moving legislation. For everything except for things that are specifically designated as budgetary, aside from the budget, everything else requires a 60-vote supermajority. It makes it very difficult to get legislation passed at the federal level because of the difficulty of getting 60 senators on board. Some have argued that's a good thing. Some have argued that's a bad thing. Personally, anything that slows down the federal government from passing anything bothers me not, right?
Correct.
But I understand that there are counter arguments, but be that as it may, that is what the Democrats are in effect doing, right? They're saying that you need a supermajority, right? That a minority of us being whatever they are, 57, 53, I've forgotten, but whatever number north of 50 they are, that's enough to hold everything up. And because you didn't win enough of the Senate, you're not going to be able to get anything done. And that's how Republicans feel in the U.S. Senate, is that they have not a sufficient majority to swamp and get the 60 that they need.
Right, right. Because more often than not, a lot of the past legislature has come down to J.D. Vance breaking the tie in the Senate. So
If they can get to a tie, right.
So, and whether that's good or bad, you're right, it's up for debate. But I think it's a lot clearer. At least you know, and I do think it fosters compromise. I really do think it does.
Oh, absolutely. Or inaction altogether, which is sometimes the compromise. The compromise frequently is we're just not going to be able to get anything done.
Hey, God bless the sequester and good luck as far as I'm concerned. All right, Mike, before we wrap up, is there anything you want to end this on?
The idea that this is something that needs to be viewed in the greater context of polarization, that there is less willingness for either party or the media or voters, for that matter, to show a great deal of honor to past institutions and ways of doing business. I think that's really what this is all about. You certainly could see flipping Congress in the 2026 election. That's a big deal. I'm not suggesting that's not a very big deal, because it is.
Right.
But one of the reasons why that is such a big deal is because we live in such polarized times, and I believe that there will come a time, I don't know when, but it will come sooner than a decade from now, in which a number of politicians, I don't know how many, and I don't know how successful they will be, but there will be politicians who do make hay who get their voices heard by standing up for methods by which to eradicate the polarization and bring the two sides of American politics together.
I hope that's true, Mike, and that's a good thing to end on. All right, everyone, you've been watching Liberty Lens right here at Grumblings Media, grumblingsmedia.com. Find us on all the platforms, YouTube, Rumble, Facebook, X. Also, check us out on your favorite podcasting platforms, Apple, Amazon, Spotify, Pandora, basically anywhere you can find podcasts. Until next week, for Mike Termott, this has been Big John. Peace, everyone.